This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, very good. So, I think, if I put the question out to everybody who's here right now, who here has never lost anything? Never lost anything. Money, things, people, family members, loved ones, relationships, business, stuff. Has never. Is there anybody who can raise their hand to say, I've not experienced loss of some sort? Okay, so this is how it is. This is our human life, and hold on, let me just, we are susceptible, we are subject to lose that which we have. And that includes everything, includes our name, our fame, our health, our anything at all that we feel we own, we think we own, or have a relationship to, is subject to be changed. Our face, our, anything. And so this is not really about us. It's not about how strongly we love something, we hold it dearly or not hold it dearly, or attached to it or not attached to it, biologically, emotionally, mentally, how good we take care of it, how bad we take it, has nothing to do with our, us. This is a law of nature, one of the laws of nature, that is just the way it is. Things become otherwise. And so just knowing this can give us a little bit of a breathing room, that when we are, we're changing something, going through transition, going through health issues, going through moving and changing, very big things in our lives, partnerships or, location, anything at all, just knowing that things become otherwise. And it doesn't mean that it has to be seen as a loss or the end, or the idea or the teaching of the Buddha about impermanence, for example. But often we think about impermanence as the end of something, or death as the end of something. But this is our relationship to it, and not necessarily. The end is not always the case, but transition, transferring, changing, and it's just going to be the way it is. But as humans, we experience loss, right? And it's with us, and it's very, very painful. We can't deny it or ignore it or philosophize it away, the pain and suffering. We shouldn't do that. So it's really important to know that being uncomfortable, having the pain, having the loss, having all of that is something we experience. And so bringing it to even if you sort of categorize different ways of experiencing things mentally, physically, neurologically, through our body, through our senses, through our intelligence, through our relationships with stuff or people or anything else, it still can be painful. Not always, not everything, not loss of everything is painful. You lose maybe a piece of clothing or something, you may forget about it the next day. But some things become sentimental. Oh, my mother gave me this. My grandmother gave it to my mother. She gave it to me. I'm responsible. I have to keep it. All these things. And then that becomes a little bit more painful, right? So, but thinking about loss of grief over loss of loved ones, I think that's probably one of the most difficult ones to endure. Of course, loss of relationship, loss of positions, loss of finances, loss of, but loss of loved ones is on top of the line, painful for us. And so in these, thankfully, in these sort of environments where we are practicing mindfulness, practicing to ease our lives, it's not easy to be human. All these other animals have it easy. They, not really. They're always striving to be alive and to have food and find shelter and all that. But at least they know who they are. There is a sense of, okay, I mean, maybe they're not thinking I'm a bird, but they're acting like a bird. They're not trying to be a monkey when they're actually a bird. But with us humans, there's a lot of complexities of identity and how we see ourselves, how good we are, how competent we are, how skilled we are, how educated we are, how. There is no end. There is no end to us finally arriving and being fine and just doing what a human does. There is no manual. There is no standard manual of this is what a human does. We just, go through life, and our brain also puts us on autopilot. So we're not, a lot of times we're not aware. We're not choosing our choices, They're chosen for us through habitual ways. So I just share with you a personal experience. A few years ago, I lost my father, 2015 December. Well, he was in his 90s, and my relationship with him was very beautiful, very fulfilling, very close, and it was a hard loss. But I remember I was grieving so much that I didn't even know I was grieving. One day, maybe a week into it, I woke up and I looked around and there was dishes everywhere. The bed wasn't made. Everything, my clothes were everywhere. I was just like really cluttered around, unorganized. Food was on the counter for maybe a few days or something. And I realized, oh my God, I've been grieving. And that's when I was able to acknowledge it. Instead of falling into the unhappiness, the sorrow, I all of a sudden woke up and I saw. And when I saw the impact of it, or what I had been, how I had been, absolutely didn't care about nothing, anything. I lived very, just I wasn't present. I wasn't there. It gave me, when I saw that, it gave me a little bit of a sort of, okay, now is this what you want to live like? Oh no, let's get myself together. Let's take a shower. Let's do this and that and the other. But then about a year and a half later, some of you might know, I lost my son. And that was another unbelievable, I mean, there is nothing close to that, to lose a child. And I mean, my brain shattered, my heart, my brain, all of my practice, everything went just. And so it took a while for me to regroup. But what was so instrumental for me to get myself out of this dark hole, this dark well of muck, like as if I was sucked into this dark matter or dark space, and the pain and the sorrow was not personal, it was just happening. It wasn't like a choice for me to feel it or not feel it. It was just incredibly. And so every time I would feel that, experience that, a couple of things would show up. The first mental thought would come to me was, oh, may no being, I don't care who they are, how bad, good, it doesn't. I don't want anybody to understand this pain. May no being experience this. So a sense of compassion, really strong compassion would come to me, like, oh my God, may no being experience this. It was like fear comes with it, you know? Like all your life with the child, the life of your child, you think about, oh my, you don't want nothing to happen to them. You're afraid of things happening to them, and you're protecting them, and you're constantly worrying and trying and trying and all of it. And then it happens. That's it. There's nothing you can do. You know, as a parent, I'm sure many of you might experience or know this. You know, as a parent, I mean, I was my case. You said, give me your, they said, give your brain. I give my brain, no discussion. Give your eyes. When can we go and do this? You know, give your liver, give anything. I would do it. There's no discussion. But the death is something that could not be undone. And so, yeah, thank you. So much better. But so that same compassion for the thought of somebody else experiencing such a thing, what opened my heart to my own, to see, oh my God, this is an incredible pain and suffering that I know I don't want to experience. I mean, to back up a little bit, because I had been practicing a lot of, you know, teachings of the Buddha and mindfulness, equanimity, loving kindness, and many, many other, all the teachings, I had the sort of the foundation for it, but then I fell much deeper into understanding them through this experience alone. And so prior to this happening, I had gained a really great level of peace, happiness, joy, you know, my suffering of all kinds of different sufferings that, you know, ordinarily we humans gather growing up, different traumas, different things that we, you know, we are not capable of handling, whatever. I had worked on a lot of them and they had been resolved, and my suffering, normal and extraordinary ones, they were resolved, and I was happy, I was peaceful. So with that experience, my intention for freedom from suffering became much, much more determined. No, I will not have this for myself. So every time I would fall into the hurricanes and tsunamis of grief, those practices enabled me to see that this grief is not about emotional stuff. It's not a bonding. It's not attachment. It's nothing. It's biological. It's every cell in my body has lost. Every cell in my eyelashes have lost, right? In my bones, in my blood, in everything has lost. It's neurological. It's, yes, psychological, but more so biological and neurological. And so for that matter, I got to really understand the depth and the strength of this grief that has a hold. It's not like, oh, you know, things we people say to others, oh, he wouldn't want you to suffer. He wouldn't want you to be, oh my God, I wanted to curse them. Like, get away. I don't care. It's biological. It's neurological. It's like my nails have lost. right? So slowly, by seeing the depth of it, seeing the inner working of it, like this is a tapestry of my body, my soul, and this person who has passed. And then I was also able to discern between physiological, neurological, psychological, emotional, and the mental identity of my son, possession, right? Really not seeing that anything that's there can become otherwise. We can lose it. It's not personal. That part was also, I was able to distinguish that, discern that, unpack it, and see, oh, every time I think of him as my son, oof, I mean, the suffering is unbelievable, it's debilitating. But when I would be able to be in a place where I'm able to see this being as a being who's been going through lifetimes of coming to, you know, that's the frame of reference, whether it's true or not, how much you believe in it or not, it was helpful to me to see him as not originated from me. This soul, this being, this karma, this essence did not originate from me. Nobody originates from nothing. I mean, actually, in one of my retreats, silent retreats that I went to, I think it was it this year or last year, April? I've been to many of them, 16, 17 of them, 10 days silent. And this particular one, I was, all of a sudden, I fell into this depth of concentration and knowing that I was able to, I had a vision. This vision took me, like, when I saw or thought about my son for the first time ever, my attention came to my belly, that he was a baby in my you know, belly, and then my mind went to, where did that come from? I saw a tunnel going into the forest of him being unpacked into cells, other cells, other cells, other cells, other cells, to nowhere. There was no end to going back to the origin of, where did this being come from? His body, even my body, my parents' body, the eggs and sperms of all of us coming forward and going back into eternity and backwards, you know? And so it was just an incredible vision of, and then it ended up in the ocean. I saw this one little cell, like a leaf, floating in the ocean. It was so beautiful. It was so empowering. It was so much more big, you know, bigger. It was not, had nothing to do with me, you know? This was a being with all of us. So there was such a, like, insights in like these would give me ease to not attach to, this is my son, I have lost my son, the I and the he, and that brings suffering. So, you know, sometimes it's useful to bring in or allow, even if it's philosophical, we haven't experienced it for ourselves, but it's useful to think of it like this, right? And not suffer for it. So we're not obligated to suffer, no matter what. Just because I'm a mother, oh my goodness. And I'm biologically, neurologically, psychologically, culturally very bound to suffer for, you know, as a symbol of my love for the child, to suffer for. I have decided that no, my life is not going to be filled with obligated sufferings. I will not do that if I have something to do with it. So every time this grief would hit me, which has become much, much less frequent and much less intense, what I've done is watch the the mind, and where is this mind? What's it doing with that feeling, with that tsunami? Is it making an issue out of it and going into, oh my God, this and that, I could have, I should have, this and that, and there, whatever, anything, right? Anything could come. And then take me to that dark hole. I'm not going there. No, I will not go there. And it is not necessary. Nothing good comes out of it. There is absolutely no benefit to my suffering, you know? So slowly just seeing the where is this leading, changing, shifting, and stopping it, feeling and knowing that I do not have to prove my love by continual suffering. There is no need. And so just bringing myself back to the present moment, feeling my own, my heart of compassion really being truly, truly, truly moved. That's what, you know, that sets apart compassion from empathy, for example, right? I mean, there is a spectrum of these feelings. I've kind of broke it down from compassion back to pity. You know, sometimes we feel bad for somebody, for their, you know, for their misery or something. And we kind of like, maybe we think, it's their fault. You know, they just do it to themselves, or it's their situation. There is a sense of pity for their, this fortune or lack of fortune, but it's not clean, you know. And then there is sympathy. Sympathy, you kind of feel for the sorrow of another. You maybe show it to them by saying something. It's not intense. You just feel like, oh, that's horrible. You feel obliged to show some kind of a care, right? It's not deep. Empathy, you really feel it. You feel the feeling of the other. You know it. You get it. You have empathy. And then even that is not. Sometimes people fall into a lot of suffering because they're very empathic, right? They can fall into suffering. I've had students who would tell me, like, I feel the pain of the world. I feel the pain of the animals. I feel this, I feel that. And it's so painful for me. I don't know what to do with it. So then the higher level, more skilled level is compassion, which is a movement of the heart. The heart feels it, the heart knows it, but the heart is moved to relieve suffering, to do something about it, whether for somebody else or for oneself, right? So that movement of the heart is very precious, and it's also, there is wisdom that's necessary and should come with it. What is the best thing to do right now? You know, what is, sometimes it's doing nothing. That is a movement by itself, doing nothing. Sometimes it's preventing. Sometimes it's guiding. Sometimes it's shifting. Sometimes it's no, full force going in. So for towards oneself, self-compassion, the movement is seeing that, okay, yeah, this is taking me to suffering. And no, I don't want to go there. How do I do? What do I do about it? You move to actually relieve that for yourself. And so being able to experience loss, which we all do eventually one way or another, we all do, and also live with joy, live with ease, and not be bound by unnecessary suffering, something that we can actually do something about. Unnecessary suffering, unnecessary or unuseful, or just why? Why should we live in pain? No, I will not accept it for myself. That is my goal and determination. Whatever I need to do wisely, kindly, you know, if I have to break up a relationship, if I have to move something, if I have to change my mind, if I have to change a decision, if I have to, you know, stop something. If I have to go to the doctor, if I have whatever I have to do. But it all starts from the intelligence of the heart. I've actually put that under in my book. I call these heart, wise heart qualities, I've put them under superior heart intelligence. It's not just heart intelligence. They're superior because they come with knowing, being present, and being having that volition, that determination to not be harmed or cause harm. And oneself is always included. So my life is very beautiful and I live fully content with contentment. I enjoy my life fully, enjoy everything fully, my relationships and everything. And I feel the grief hit me. It comes and goes. Today I heard this message. It really pained my heart, you know, that empathy, that understanding, that knowing came up. And then I can work with it and allow it to be real, be true, be an experience of myself, for myself and others, and be there and ease it in any way I can be, bring ease. I would do that. So I'm gonna just stop. Yeah, sweetheart. Yeah. If there's any comments or questions, I'd be happy to discuss. Yeah. Please go ahead. Yeah.
You know, you described this ability through the tsunami of grief.
Yes.
And can you, I don't know if it's possible to articulate like kind of what the mindfulness practice was through that helped you, just because that's quite a powerful notion to me.
Yes, yes. Well, yes, thank you. That's a very good question. So one, the mindfulness part is first knowing and being in this. It's like I've fallen into this tornado that's shredding me apart. It's like, oh, I'm here in this, right? And then noticing that this is so painful and my immediate, you know, the thing is about it that's helpful to mindfulness is that our mind is always there to say something, always has an opinion, always has a story. Why? Because, you know, from one perspective, because it wants to create or recognize issues so it can solve it. Unknowingly, it creates issues. It creates problems that are not there. Like the person is done. This body is gone. We cremated him. It is no way to come back. That body is done, right? So what use is it for my mind, for the mind to come and say, oh, what if we do this? What if that? Oh, da, 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 da. It's done, right? So you catch it with your awareness. You see the mind is talking about something that is absolutely not relevant to the fact, to objectivity. You see it, you're emotional, but you have the mindfulness to see it. And then the practices that Diana has brought several times to this class of equanimity, right? Equanimity, that feeling of staying steady. Like when you know that you are suffering, there is a lot of you're in the boiling water. You're in the pot of boiling water. Get out. Get out of this boiling hot water, you know? So it's not one or two practices so supposedly, but that awareness of what is going on right now, it's very, very painful. And once the mind gets involved in the pain, it can make a you know, hot weather into a tornado. We want to you kind of diffuse that or prevent that from it becoming a tornado. And if you are in a tornado, you cry. I cried. That's it. I would even pick up the phone. And you know, something interesting, it for me was helpful if somebody else saw my suffering. I don't know why. I would call somebody and cry. And cry to them and cry. And, oh my God. And I would say whatever I wanted to say, being aware, kind of like strategically, you know, aware that I'm just, you know, and I would pick somebody that I knew they could handle it, that they could listen, they could handle it, and they're not going to tell me something to stop it. They're just going to be able to listen. So you figure out ways to deal with this. I also did a lot of rituals, a lot of rituals. I traveled a lot to monasteries around the world, just because I wanted to go practice and all that. And I would bring a piece of some of his ashes with me. I mean, these are very tough things to do. But my heart and my mind, there was a promise of healing if I did this. The closeness, the, you know, and I would, like in Japan, in Nara River, I would leave it, cry and give a poem and write something. You know, in Thailand, in the Kwai River, I would throw it in there 4 a.m. and cry and send him loving kindness. Then I would see a monk walking and I'm saying, oh my God, maybe that's him. What, you know, just whatever you can do to sort of help this situation to not push it down or be stuck in it. I made a vow that first day that we had his memorial in front of 200 people. I first fainted, very dramatic, all that. But when I finally came to, and I made a vow, I will not be that mother who's going to lose the light in her eyes. I will not be the mother who's done. I will slowly allow joy to come into my life again, in that midst of, you know, pain and suffering.
You knew that, right? And yeah, that's a strong, foundation for, the rest of it is, I believe.
Yeah. And I didn't feel like I need to apologize or to, I don't need to prove to anybody I loved him. My goodness. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of different ways, but I think the most, the core thing was that self-compassion, not wanting to suffer. Not. I will not, no matter what. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sweetheart. Domingo has love.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your vulnerability, sharing your deeply touching story. And I guess I can, a lot of this makes sense for me. And I guess my question is, how do you then deal with the thought that once in a while wants to appear that says you're abandoning the love, you're abandoning the suffering, you're abandon like it, the mind wants to make you
Yeah.
feel bad
Right.
for choosing joy, you
Yeah.
know, for how do you then
Yeah.
deal with that aspect of it's actually not abandonment. This is, you know, this is yet another form of showing love and, but
Yes.
yeah,
Yeah. Yeah,
please.
very good. You know, they're there. All these thoughts are there to justify the suffering of it. It's a justification, you know. So when there is pain, pain is present. And the mind becomes, I mean, my mind became bewildered. Honestly, I would have, honestly, the first year, I would have flashes of insanity. I mean, like milli, 100th of a second. I would feel it, that my brain would become confused. Like I couldn't function for a flash of insanity, right? So what I'm talking about is enormous, is total hurricane and tsunami, right? Internally. And I would have to live with it, and I would have to sort of go through it, not numbing it, not nothing, go through it, ask questions, be like, for example, one of the things I said to my teacher was, before this, I had a very strong loving kindness practice. I would always send kindness to anybody I saw in my mind. They didn't know it or knew, but whatever. I couldn't do that anymore. I couldn't do it anymore. And I said to my teacher, I'm so sad. I can't say kind love, send love kindness to others. He said, Manager, do you know what's happened to you? It's like there is no heart. The heart is broken. Not broken like two pieces. It's shattered. It's dust. Right? And so no, seeing that reality kind of like, oh, so it's normal. It kind of became normal for me to have the pain and suffering. And when my mind would want to say, oh, you're disregarding or anything like that, it didn't really happen too much for me. I think probably because I did a lot of ceremonies, different ceremonies in his name. I wrote poetry. I talked about him. At first, actually, I taught a lot of grieving courses, loving kindness and compassion courses. I created meetings that he wanted to create, and I spoke at these meetings for young people in his name. Kind of like I saw he had a mission, he had a vision in his own life, and I carried it for him. Until the day came that I was done. I was done, but in a way that I realized, wait a minute, if this hadn't happened, would this mission that I'm on for families who have lost, this grieving stuff, all the teaching, would that be my thing? Is that something I want to do? Oh. No, that's not something that's for him. That's to honor him. So because I think because I did a lot of things that honored him, those thoughts of, you don't have the, I don't know, you don't deserve to be happy, or how are you going to forget him, or how can you forget him, rarely occurred to me. So that might be one thing to think about, to do some things in the honor of that person you've lost. But once you do that, that's like, I've done this. I don't have to suffer all the time. I don't have to think about it all the time. I don't have to not laugh at the joke. I'm gonna laugh at the joke. I'm gonna laugh at myself being so dumb sometimes, making mistakes. Is that helpful, love, sweetheart?
That makes perfect sense. Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Because I mean, nothing compared to your amount of grief, but on a smaller scale, I've gone through my share of grief, and same thing. It put me on a path of being a grief counselor for a while, and I guess after a decade of that, and then currently I'm just grieving a relationship, but
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I've been at it for 2 years. Is it okay? Like, enough is enough. I've done
Oh,
enough of the rituals,
oh
and
my God. Look, right away, it's okay. Immediately. Anytime you feel that it hits, naturally hits, okay, it's fine. It's just the wave. It's come and gone through, but you're not obligated to stay in this wave, in this muck, in this whatever. Immediately you realize that, oh, it's changing. Oh, when you look at the sky, the sunset, the sunrise, that feeling is not there. My teacher, Ajahn Pasuna, Lumpa Pasuna, he's an elder in the Theravada tradition under Ajahn Chah. He always encourages us to notice the cessation of suffering, the absence. That is amazing. Suffering or unhappiness, sorrow, jealousy, agitation, aggravation, anger, any of these mind states that are kind of, they're unwholesome mind states. They're not always there. Notice the lack of them and you enjoy. Oh, right this moment, I'm fine. Oh, there is no grief. And absolutely, because once you notice them, your mind or your brain becomes used to them, likes them, and will more likely take you there than not. But you have absolutely zero obligation to suffer any more than naturally it occurs naturally. No
That
obligation.
helps. Thank you so much. That helps.
In fact, you are, each one of us are obligated to be happy. Why? Because our unhappiness becomes a burden on somebody else. Somebody else has to take care of it now. At least somebody else, but the society. Our unhappiness becomes a burden. We are obligated to be happy and well. If anything else you take, nothing, this would be the thing to take with you tonight. Yeah. Thank you for your questions and for us to be human, it's not easy to be human. If you're interested to get my book or look at it, I've got lots and lots of these lessons in there. I'm gonna put it in the chat, the link. And what this book is that I have a commitment to come with the book. You buy the book, it's not one of those that you get it, you read it, you're on your own. The author comes with the book. So I have made a sort of accommodations for people to register their book and get updates, meet the author periodically, ask questions, go through the lessons. This doesn't work for me, that works for me. This is over here, that's the over the, there is a lot of, there's 60 very fundamental qualities and skills that I have come to realize, people, we all need to have them. We should have them. It should be human right. It should not be just accessible to somebody who seeks them or somebody who's suffering. They should become human right for us to learn. So I come with it. And in fact, this Friday, from 1 to 2 Pacific time, 3 to I'm sorry, 4 to 5 Eastern time and 9 to 10 London time. I'm going to be available 1 hour on Zoom, and people who have bought the book, registered it, they get the email, but others are, it's open for others to come in to learn about it. And I'm so happy this week we have a 12-year-old. Can you imagine a 12-year-old girl? She wants to come to the meeting, to the session. And her mom said, "Oh, she hasn't finished the book. Is that okay for her to?" I said, "Oh my God, I haven't finished the book." No, of course you can come. So I'm really interested, to excited to see what her reflections are, or questions are. These are all mindfulness, lessons on in different domains of systems. Domains of the planet, our relationship to the planet, and the domain of us humans. The link to the Zoom, let me see. Let me see if I can actually give you the forms link so you can sign up to it. If you could. Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna just send you this form to sign up to it, and you'll get the link from that. Then I'll know who's coming. And please write to me, manager at. It's really dark here now. I can't see. Perfectly. Yeah. .org. You can write to me also if you have any other questions or comments. And I'm really good at being happy. Look, I'm very good at grieving. I'm very good at being happy because we need the skills. And it doesn't matter who deserves it or not. Nobody should suffer. Nobody. That's where I stand. Okay. Thank you so much, Serena, for staying up and helping out.
Could you resend the link? I believe it didn't go to everyone because I don't see anything on my
Oh, well,
end.
thank you for saying it. I think it went to
Yeah.
somebody who wrote to me personally. I see. Oh, thank you for saying that. Okay. Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, it went to one person. What was that? And then my email address too. Yeah, you're welcome. May you be peaceful. May you be happy. May you enjoy life always, always, and know how to enjoy it no matter what. No matter what. Yeah, thank you for being here. Thank you. Yeah. You're welcome. So hopefully see you soon. Sometimes I may come back again and teach another time, but if you have questions, reach out to me anytime. Good night.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.